Well, welcome again to the Gooder Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Freich. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I have met and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, and fitness. As such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great people and subject matter experts and have them share their insights, expertise, and passions to help businesses all around the world become gooder. Now, today, we get to talk about tea, cultural fusion-ish, and community building. And I'm super excited to tackle these topics and more with my guest today, Sashi Chandran, the founder and CEO of Tea Drops, a bagless, dissolvable tea blend or blends designed for the modern tea drinker, which if you guys haven't heard about this, I'm super excited. I geek out over things that most people wouldn't expect me to, but I'm a big tea drinker, so this is super exciting for me. Welcome, Miss Sashi. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Diana, for having me. This is such a joy to be on your podcast today and share my story.
Great. How's LA? Are you in LA today?
I'm in Encinitas, which is North San Diego County. It's about an hour and a half from Los Angeles, but our headquarters are in LA, and either way, it's a sunny, beautiful day here in SoCal. So
I can't complain. Are you in the 80s yet?
It feels like it today. That's why I took off my sweater right before we started. Mm-hmm. I'm like, ooh, it's getting warm in here. But I think it's like mid-70s.
Nice. I love that. Well, before we kind of jump into some of these topics, I really wanted you to maybe start a little bit about yourself and Tea Drops, like the way you like to talk about it, the way you like to talk about Tea Drops. So tell us about yourself and why Tea Drops exists.
Yeah, well, there's a lot in there, but I would say most important to me is that this was really created, Tea Drops was created out of a sincere passion of mine. And I would say also a ode to my own cultural heritage. And culturally, like my background is that my mom is Chinese and my dad's from Sri Lanka. So both of those countries have a very highly engaged tea culture. At one point in history, those two countries were the largest exporters of tea in the world. And my dad was actually born on a tea estate in Sri Lanka before the U.S. And my mom came, also an immigrant, came to the U.S. And so my parents met in L.A. at UCLA. And I was born in Los Angeles, raised in Los Angeles. And, you know, probably different than most other friends' households is tea was always a staple at family gatherings. And it's something that really connected with me to my relatives and my parents' friends, because I didn't actually have, you know, both my parents were immigrants here, didn't really have a lot of family around. So it's not like I grew up with a ton of other, I guess, like, you know, cultural communities you have, you know, where people kind of immigrate together, they formulate a community. I really grew up as a true, I don't know, a typical child, American childhood, but my household was different in that, you know, I had certain, we had certain, you know, beverages as in tea, but also different types of food at the table. But my relationships with my uncles and my aunts, my grandma really centered around a cup of tea. And so that's was my first exposure of tea really being this point of connection, right? With your heritage connection as like a almost a vehicle to kind of have an open and honest conversation. And one of my best memories, you know, as a kid was having tea with my mom, and she would give me different types of tea for different reasons. So if I was sick, it would be a chrysanthemum Chinese herbal tea. When it was just more of like a girl's chat, it would be an English breakfast tea with milk, enjoying it British style. And, you know, my grandma made a certain type of tea when I would go over her house. So I have all of these memories, and they're very sensory around tea. And I think that passion carried through with me. And when I started, you know, I graduated college, I started working at my one of my first corporate jobs, I tried to still take that tea ritual with me and make tea at work. And if you've made loose leaf tea before, then you know there's a lot of steps involved. You have a kettle, you have a strainer, you have to steep the tea, and it's a lot of time involved. And so for someone that kind of was on a very fast-paced corporate route, that was just not a reasonable ask to make tea that way every day. And tea bags itself were just never as flavorful or aromatic.
Yeah.
And they just lacked a certain experiential component too, that I felt was very important to tea culture. So a long way of saying that I felt there was a lot of opportunity in the tea category, the space itself. Yeah. I also felt from the tea brands I purchased from, I didn't feel this like brand connection.
Yeah.
You know, my relationship with a lot of those brands really stopped at shelf, because I would buy something because I liked the tea flavor or variety. But where was that connection to the brand? You know, did they understand that tea was really the sacred ritual to me?
Yeah.
That I really love the community aspect of tea. And I didn't see that. And I also didn't see real innovation in the category either. So that really, those two things were kind of the inspiration to at least start experimenting with different tea blends and varieties and see if I could, you know, figure out a more convenient and better way to tea.
Yeah. It's so interesting. You know, my parents, immigrants from Central Europe, met each other in Los Angeles as well. I was born in Santa Monica, though. And we lived in Thousand Oaks until I was in about the third grade, and then we moved to Seattle. But my parents are from Central Europe, from small countries, and everything about, from our name to the foods that we ate, were all unique, especially when we moved to Seattle. We were like the Russian family, even though that's not where we were from. We were like the only other in the whole school. It was very bizarre. But my mom drank coffee because it was imposed on her when she moved here as an American ritual. But my dad was very much a tea drinker, and kind of the same way. It was you drank it in this way, or like each kind of tea had its own moment in the day and in the time. Yes. And then living in Seattle, I got heavily exposed to Japanese and Chinese culture, because we have a lot of those communities around here, and the food and the people that I worked with, and a lot of Filipino families too. And tea was very much part of the socialization. And so it became really important for me too. But as I was drinking it, first of all, people thought I was bizarre for drinking tea, but it was almost pretentious in a way. Like, you're bringing your own loose leaf tea, just get some Lipton's or something and throw it in a thing and let's roll, right? And that sounds like what you were running into.
Definitely. And it's, I'm almost jealous, because I know that the Seattle tea culture is a lot strong. Oh, I know it's a coffee.
Yeah, it's still a coffee town, but the tea's pretty strong here. Yeah.
I do find that in more of the Pacific Northwest, there's just more of a ritual around tea, or like an acceptance around tea, and I don't necessarily feel here in California. But I feel the same way, that that's what I was attracted to. And it's not that, you know, for me, it wasn't like the pretentious thing. Was I actually like a lot of different tea bags, but it was more just learning more about what's in your tea bag. That 80% of the tea bags have microplastics in them or are bleached. Mm-hmm. And like, at some point when you realize that, it's really hard to turn back and still use tea bags.
Absolutely.
You know? And there's been a huge progression in the industry, and that's changed. Mm-hmm. Now a lot are making compostable tea bags, but that during that time, it was really, that was definitely true. And so that turned me off. And there's like this ritual component to it that's very hard to verbalize. Right. But the idea of, like, you know, scooping a cup of loose leaf tea, putting it in a kettle, boiling the water, hearing that water pour over the tea leaves, there's something that you cannot replicate that with the tea bag experience. And so I still wanted, with tea drops, to keep that ritual, sense of ritual alive and sense of experience alive, but just, you know, conveniently cut down the time a little bit more. So that was the aspiration.
Well, tea drops was, as I was doing a little homework, I think it was officially considered a side hustle at the time. And what I'm wondering was, like, was it something that you intentionally set out to do, or was it an opportunity that was presented to you? Like, or was it both?
I think it was a little bit of both. You know, I think it was hard for even me to call it like a real business until maybe a couple of years into doing it. Like I still, even when I decided to quit my job, which was 6 months later after I started making this in my, you know, apartment kitchen at the time, I was socializing it with friends and colleagues at work, having them try it. I was doing these small time artisan shows on the weekends. It still was very hard for me to say, oh, this is a business. Yeah. You know, I think there's a certain association you make when you say it's a business. There's a lot more pressure involved. Agreed. And right. And so even when I quit my job and said, I want to do this full time, I remember being like scared to tell people, yeah, I'm doing this business full time. I would say like, I'm working on a project.
Oh, really?
I would dance around that word.
Wow.
And so it really wasn't, even though people knew like, okay, project business, like, you know, you're basically leaving. I was working at eBay at the time to do this, you know? So I kind of, because I always just wanted a, you know, a safeguard that, okay, if this didn't work out, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Yep. And you internally have to get comfortable with that idea. So it took me a while to be comfortable with that idea. Like, I'm leaving to start this business and treat it like a business and believe in yourself that you can run and have a business. Yeah. So all those things you're also internally figuring out.
And I'm curious here, where do you line up in the child lineup? Are you the oldest? Are you the youngest? Middle? Are you the only?
I'm the youngest. I have an older sibling, a brother. He's four years older than me.
Do you feel like this kind of, I'm calling it a project. Is this, do you think because your parents are immigrants, because you're a woman, or was it just you?
I think that, I mean, my parents were very supportive. They asked the normal questions, like, are you sure you want to leave? But once I was like, no, I want to do this, they were very much behind.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I think that's because my parents were really the first entrepreneurs I ever knew. Like, even though they got, higher education and pursued master's degrees, they still came to this country with nothing. And they always had to, in order to supplement income, my mom would have a crystal vase store on the weekends at a swap meet. So she would take care of us during the week, do that on the weekends. And my dad would go to real estate seminars on the weekends and learn about like this, you know, real estate wasn't as big of a industry as it is now. So this idea of buying properties, being a landlord, he would do that and then save, bought his first property. So in their own ways, they had side hustles and I could see through them the foundation of what it takes to be an entrepreneur. And so for me to do this, they saw themselves in me. And so it was very much a natural, like, we support you in that, but we want you to know, like, what you're giving up, basically. Well,
like, it's a natural manifestation of the work that they've been putting in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So it wasn't that. It was just more of, for me, taking on that label of business, it adds a certain level of pressure that, because you just don't know. And you know this well, like, how something's going to go at all. Like, you have no, think about it. Like, I left a market research kind of marketing role to go into a food industry, beverage industry. I knew nothing about, I don't know manufacturing. I have zero contacts in this industry. So that was all, I think, at play. Like, who do you think you are, type of thing, you know, to do that.
I think those tend to almost be the most innovative and successful business owners, simply because you don't come in with a defined boundary. And I mean, it's really, you know, tea drops, and we talk about this right now. Your approach to tea drops, or your approach to tea and the category, is disruptive in every way, shape, or form. Everything from product formulation, delivery mechanism, packaging, flavor profiles, even channel strategy, all of this, you've basically said, hey, traditional British, hey, traditional Asian methodologies of tea. I'm just going to, you know, like that's mm-hmm. what we have in the store. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this my way. And, you know, and that's what she did.
Well, you hit it on the head. Like, I think now I'm so appreciative I didn't come from any background. Yeah. You know, I think that was part of the intimidation that I experienced was like, I don't know anyone in the tea industry. I mean, I have contacts through my dad because he was born on a tea estate, but like, he actually didn't tell me he was born on a tea estate until I started business.
No yeah. way.
Years into starting this business, by the way, not right. So you know, there, I didn't, yeah, there's so much, I didn't know any other tea brands. Like I just had no mm-hmm. contacts. And so that felt very intimidating, but now I'm so mm-hmm. grateful that that was my journey because it really allowed me to think so differently about tea. And my perspective was I just wanted to make tea accessible. And you and mm-hmm. I have had this conversation around mm-hmm. the roots and the foundations of tea culture, tea yeah. history, the role it plays in yeah. American history, its colonial mm-hmm. roots, and like tea itself, high tea being very, a very, you know, highbrow experience. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think of British tea culture, you think of refined and like very uppity in a sense. And I just wanted to really dismantle yeah. that in my own way. And because I felt tea was, should yeah. be this very accessible yeah. ritual and form of self-care yeah. in a way. So it allowed me to kind of, yeah, think about that whole experience my own way.
I remember when we were talking about this and both you and I just had a moment where like, oh my goodness. Like we talked about, you know, American culture and how mm-hmm. American CT predominantly are through the lens of the British. Of course, we all know about the dumping the tea in the harbor. But then even, you know, that the British colonialized much of the parts of the world that created tea because that ended up being something they wanted to own. And then they changed that culture. Yeah. And then on the opposite end, we've got, you know, the different Asian cultures and their tea cultures, but they are steeped in heritage and properness. And what we're missing is that what's the American version? Like we're living these two different mm-hmm. tea versions. And I feel like yours is there. I feel like bubble tea has a little bit of that in there too. Americans have really like yes. said, ooh, bubble yeah. tea, this is fun, you know, and kind of crack the yeah. door open a little bit to say, tea doesn't have to be proper or snobby or regal or royal or special. It can just be a moment to just chill with your friends.
Agreed. Like it eliminates bubble tea too, definitely eliminates the seriousness of it all. And I think that's what we try to do. Like on our packaging, on our cylinders, we have like very yeah. playful puns and like sayings, and we kind of promote this whole mm-hmm. tea magic, tea leaf reading with the tea fiber that's at the bottom of your cup. So it's like, it's just silly, you know, it, part of it's like very yeah. silly, whimsical. And that's kind of yeah. what we wanted to do with mm-hmm. that the culture is because we're just like, it doesn't have to be yeah. this either extreme, which you really, you articulated so well that it's either steeped in tradition or it's very mm-hmm. stuffy highbrow. And I guess that's yeah. traditional in its own way. Why can't there be an experience that's yeah. just accessible? You don't feel intimidated mm-hmm. by it. You know, like I don't feel like I need to know the difference between a green tea, right. a white tea, a black tea, or steep time in order right. to have a tea drop. Right. I just put yeah. it in my hot water 30 seconds or less later. I have a great tasting.
Yeah. And tea. You know, I'll just do this shameless little plug here. You sent me this amazing little, sampler kit that basically had one of a bunch of these, options. So mm-hmm. you make it so easy for somebody who's new to this to just kind of try it without committing to 40 servings or, you know what I mean? Like you can just try one and see how you yeah. like it. And that's still more of the breaking the category convention. And, you know, and then I even want to say, like, kind of go into this, I think you've referenced it as this bath bomb approach. And for those people that don't know, and I might even go step off camera real quick and bring it back so that people can see it. Okay. So even this delivery mechanism, like just so that people can see this. Okay. We're in this little bag This is a little sample kit. And then for those that haven't seen this, and those of you that are listening, you can't see this, but those of you that want to see it, they're like this. And you just put it in one of my 17 cups of empty tea around here and pour some hot water in it. Or if it's a cold tea, you put it in a bigger glass and you're done. It's like, there's no waste. There's you've got your single pouch that's recyclable, and you're one and done. And I love it. It's just super simple and makes it easy for people to try it. And because it's easy to make, you don't have to steep it for 3-5 minutes. How much do I put in? It's just a single serving. You're one and done. And I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, that was the whole idea. I'm glad that that resonates mm-hmm. the way that we presented the sent you, the ultimate sampler kit, which is just more of an experiential, like figure out what you like, and it's listed out for you what the tea varieties are.
But this, I'm assuming this is dehydrated, right, into a form. Like, where did that, did you stumble across that? Were you in the tub and went, literally, it could be.
No, truly. I think that was it. I was in the tub. I saw a bath bomb or using a bath bomb and was like, why can't this be done with tea? Or, you know, you see, those fun shaped sugar cubes and stuff. And you're like, why can't that be, a tea also, done for mm-hmm. a tea experience. And so that was definitely the genesis of mm-hmm. asking that question and then working in the kitchen and trying to figure out a way to put this together. And it took about a year and a half or so of just, I was like taking what I learned from, seventh or eighth grade mm-hmm. of the scientific method, mm-hmm. hypothesis, of experimenting, did that over and over again until I came up with something that I was like, okay, I think this is it. I think we're close. And then I ended up going to, a retired attorney who was working at this business resource center. And I was just getting some guidance. And he's the one who said, you actually have some IP around here. Like all the things you're telling me that you're doing to make this, you should think about protecting it. And that was my first, kind of thought that, okay, maybe I should pursue a patent, and ended up writing my own patent over the next few weekends. And he reviewed it. He was a retired attorney. So he reviewed it. And then I submitted it on the USPTO site. So that first basis of a provisional patent is what we use to secure mm-hmm. the patent that we now have, utility patent we have now around the process of how tea drops are made.
That's so fun. I mean, I really do. I love that you're just busting out the category altogether. This might seem like a really boneheaded question, because anybody who does a quick Google on tea drops or on you yourself are going to see some high-profile names associated with Michelle Obama, Christy Teigen, Tory Burch, I think Oprah even. And now I know you can't really speak for them, but because of their visibility, and we all know that these folks have a process by which, anytime they talk about any brand, they go through a process of making sure everything's taken care of. Can you share your insights and the thoughts of when they and their people connected with you, what were they saying? Like, why are they so excited? What are they telling you?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I don't know the full answer. You would have to ask them. I there's a few of them where I got introduced just because I truly think it was luck. We can get into this, but one way without, I didn't know how to raise capital or what that meant. I didn't have contacts there. So I would, just to kind of get my feet wet, and I would see that some of the judges on certain pitch competitions were institutional investors or notable people. And I was like, well, I guess without having a Rolodex of people I know, maybe that's a way to get in front of people. So I started pitching a lot at, founder pitch competitions. And one of the pitch competitions I entered was mm-hmm. Tory Burch Foundation pitch competition. And the top 10 got to fly to New York at the time. Mm-hmm. That was 2018. And we went through a whole great curriculum. And at the end, we could pitch in front of Tory Burch and her panel of judges for $100,000. And I ended up winning the $100,000 grant prize. And yeah, it was amazing. And, you know, Tori Burch was there, was like right there, really saying amazing things about the product. And we're sitting across from her for dinner one of those evenings. So, you know, she was very much, I mean, she's the one who voted us to win that year. And I think she could see a couple things. I think not only was it the product innovative for the category, but she really liked our social and brand mission. You know, for us, we have a partnership with Thirst Project, which focuses on clean water aid. And so for every box we sell, we donate what's equivalent to your supply of clean water to them. So that mission component, the fact we have a very female forward supply chain, by, you know, making sure all of our teas are fair trade, organic, and plus our team. So I think all of those components really resonated with her as obviously an amazing female entrepreneur. For some of the others, same, I think, luck situation with Michelle Obama. We were at the right place, right time. We gifted her something. She was a speaker at one of these conferences. And a few months later, I get an envelope that says, you know, Office of Barack Obama. And it's one of those things where you're like, this is definitely a scam. Like, it's those envelopes are like, can I toss this? You know, one of those things, it's like, I don't know. You just think that's where my mind went. But we ended up opening the letter, and it was this amazing thank you letter
from
Michelle. And just thanking us for the tea drops, telling us how innovative she thought our product was and our brand was. So that was just very fortuitous. You know, we had tried. We always thought Chrissy Teigen would be a dream ambassador for us. And I had, through a network, had like talked to one of her representatives, and he was like, well, don't even think about it unless you have $250,000 for, you know, some kind of brand partnership. And then, so, you know, we didn't go that route, but that, I think, I can definitely say, like, my team, we ended up sending product wherever we could, wherever we thought, you know, could be an address for her. And then you kind of goes into this black hole. You don't know where it goes. But 6 months later, you know, Isabella, who runs our socials, just running down the hall screaming like, I thought someone died. And she, you know, shows her phone, and like, I read this tweet from Chrissy Teigen. That's, you know, it says a few things, but it says, whoever comes to my house, whoever I interact with, and whoever comes to my house, you're hearing about this tea. Wow. It's amazing. And, you know, it's like, it still doesn't register that happened to us, because that was like the best outcome we could have asked for that relationship. It's like, it's even better than a paid endorsement. So some of these things are, I think, luck. Some of them are luck paired with just persistence of trying to reach someone. I would say the same thing is with Oprah. Like, we've tried over and over again. I remember when I first started, every quarter I would send a box. You don't know where it goes, but you know, you just keep trying.
You know, I think you might be underselling yourself. There's a quote out there that says that luck is hard work and opportunity meeting, or something like that. So something like that. And I think that might be lucky, but that's you being persistent and knowing what you want to do. And I always feel like the word luck is like, it's happenstance. Like, you're walking down the street and here comes Michelle Obama. Like, that's not, you know what I mean? Like, you're doing the work.
You know what? Well, here's the thing. And this is what I really do believe in. There's a quote out there that says, you know, the harder I work, the luckier I get. And that is true. It's like, you know, that first year, a couple of years, I did 25, 35 shows, trade shows myself. Can you imagine, like,
calling all your
crap, selling it, hearing feedback, getting rejected by buyers or people.
Just, I don't, like, get it. You know, why isn't it in a bag?
Going to, you know, on a limb, I happened to be at this conference or participate in this conference where Michelle Obama happened to be speaking. And I remember it was like very last minute. They had an open slot. I had another event I wanted to go to that weekend, but I just gave that up in order to be there. And then this happened very accidentally, but you're right. The harder you work, and, you know, nothing comes of nothing. So I do take ownership of the fact that, like, yes, we worked hard, but I also know that there's an element of grace that's involved whenever you get some of these opportunities.
Well, let's talk about what I'm going to call this channel strategy for a moment. So, okay. Yes. I know you're mostly DTC. There's some brick and mortar that you're in or e-com, maybe a little bit of mix. Yeah. But this, I've spoke with, 8 Greens recently, and they kind of had a similar approach, and I didn't know if it was intentional or not, but Nordstrom, Neiman Marcus, Tory Burch, I get that relationship, but going in through retail through those channels is not a typical go-to-market strategy for a tea brand. How did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, we have a very non-traditional story. Like I said, I think I was fumbling kind of in the beginning to figure out where our fit was, because I found the food and beverage space to be very overwhelming.
Absolutely.
When you're first starting out, meaning getting a grocery store, you know, brokers, slotting fees, all these things I'd never heard of. So I had our original packaging of tea drops, and it's still one of our hero products, is in this really beautiful wood box. You know, it's a sliding wood box. It's branded. It can very well be in a more boutique or boutique store setting, basically. And without having any capital to, you know, hire brokers or sign up with UNFI, one of the big natural food distributors, get your product in store, I had to figure out ways to still sustain the business. And I soon realized that a lot of these gift shops could be great opportunities for us, because they pay net 30, sometimes they pay right away. And we slowly started building our reputation and our channel in boutique retail. So that first year I did a lot of these artisan you know, boutique trade shows. I did 25 of them or 27 of them. There's an Atlanta gift show. There's a San Francisco gift show. There's a Dallas gift show. New York Now is a gift show. So I just did all of these and amassed, you know, our first 500 accounts, and they happened to be very boutique retail-y. And but what's great about them is they paid the bills right on time. There's no like lag in getting that capital, so I could then in turn be able to pay my interns at the time, or just pay for more inventory. And that's, once we build a reputation there, then Anthropology and Neiman Marcus and Nordstrom saw like, oh yeah, they kept seeing us at these trade shows, and that's how that relationship happened. Would I say that was like the plan the whole way? No, but I soon realized we couldn't make headway. It was so capitally intensive to be in grocery from the start that I had to figure out other channels for us to, break into.
I really think this is a brilliant, because, first of all, you know, part of this whole, what tea allows people to do, those that are not familiar with tea culture in general, like there is this component of rest and relaxation. Yes. Like somebody like me, I drink tea for energy in the morning, and then a different tea in the afternoon for relaxing. And I'll experiment with it just like wine, or for those people that are really fussy with their coffee, kind of similar type of thing. But tea has this element of outside of function, like there is this giving yourself a moment time. And we're kind of in a culture right now where self-care, you mentioned this earlier, well, self-care and beauty are very heavily interlaced with each other now. It's getting tighter and tighter. We're starting to see functional foods, functional beverages that are about making you beautiful from the inside out. We're seeing beauty be more diverse. We're seeing the removal of the mandatory makeup in order for beauty to be there, and all sorts of things. And so to see tea come through that channel, I'm just like, again, it's an upending of the category of like, well, I'm going to, this ends up being almost a beauty brand in some way, shape, or form. And I just found that so fascinating.
Yes. No, I think you're exactly right. Like, I think I was able to catch on to that, you know, relatively early on in our, I don't know, you wouldn't call it like, in the beginning that tea could be positioned. And that's why I designed the wood box, because I wanted it to be an elevated experience. I paid homage to the tea chest of the, you know, 16th, 17th century, while elevating it and making it modern, mm-hmm. like suited for the modern day tea drinker. So I felt mm-hmm. it wasn't a stretch for us to be in these yeah. boutique stores, et cetera, that are more geared toward luxury, that are more geared towards like, you know, taking a moment. It felt like a natural fit, but it also definitely was like, well, I just don't know how we're going to do in grocery right now. And it's too risky. I've already, you know, I started making kind of more investments in grocery, soon realizing, yeah. wow, this is very expensive. So it gave me the opportunity to mm-hmm. still perfect the product, still perfect a lot of things, and have a channel that I can really depend on.
So then what's next? Are you going to continue your channel strategy? Are you going to try to move into grocery? Is there different kind of products coming out in the future? What's the future look like?
Yeah. So this was, mm-hmm. you know, a few years, many mm-hmm. years ago, I would say 3-4 years ago mm-hmm. when we had the boutique grocery, boutique retail strategy. And now, you know, then that enabled me to, I knew it was a means to an end, Diana, that like,
yeah.
I needed to prove traction somewhere so that I could either raise money or find more capital.
Gotcha. And
it wasn't my end goal to be in retail. It was my end goal to ultimately build what I had mentioned earlier, which was a tea community and an experience. And I felt I could best do that online because no one really in the tea space was, I felt this was a huge opportunity. No one was really developing that online. I already had kind of a background in marketing and digital marketing. And I felt like mm-hmm. That's something I felt comfortable doing. So I basically, once I could get certain traction in boutique retail, that's what I really used to raise my first seed round. And then the idea was to take that and really build the foundations of our e-commerce experience and our community. So now today we are 80% direct to consumer in terms of what our business is. And 20% is still like that, some of that boutique retail, like our mm-hmm. some of our original partners are still with us, which is amazing. But it's also slowly expanding more into grocery retail. But now we're armed with a lot more online data and online knowledge about who our customers are, where they live, what they buy, so that we can now go to the buyer. And instead of us always knocking on doors and just having such a hard time getting in, we can now say, well, this is actually what we're, you know, where our customers live, and this is what they're buying. And now we have a really, I think, very compelling story to tell to buyers. And so we're able now to choose which retailers mm-hmm. that make the most sense for mm-hmm. us. At this point,
retailers really love that. You know, we advise as much as we can. We advise our clients when we're working on rebrands to kind of leverage those relationships. Oftentimes they can feel a little bit competitive or adversarial. And I think it's just a matter of kind of going, their job is to sell as much product as possible. And if they're thinking that your product's not going to be a good fit, it's, you know, don't take it personally. But when somebody like yourself comes in armed with data, it's kind of hard. It's kind of easy for them to then go, that is our target demo. And that makes it really easy for mm-hmm. them to make a commitment. So it's really just continued use of your experience and background and leveraging that in building your relationships moving forward. I do want to add, we talked about that. I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but I remember us talking about it for a few minutes when we were prepping for this call around this whole boba tea or bubble tea, depends on who you're talking to right now in the marketplace. But you have that component too as part of your tea family. How has that been going? Are you getting a good response from that?
Oh, absolutely. Did we talk about how that whole concept was born? Okay. So basically, you know, I kind of had this hunch that all of our teas, why I would all send surveys, why do people mm-hmm. gravitate towards tea drops? Why do our customers buy from us? And it really started clicking with me a couple of years ago that this is more than just a convenient tea. This is an experience. We're actually hitting mm-hmm. on what I originally really wanted us to do and be, which was having an experiential tea offering. And so when COVID hit, this was March last year, you know, immediately, as with all businesses, we were like, what's going to happen?
Right.
Are people going to still buy tea? Should we plan for the worst? What's, you know, what's going on? And I think in that process, what I started doing was looking online and seeing like, what are people even searching for right now? Mm-hmm. As it relates to tea, and are people anxious? Are people buying more herbal teas? Are they buying more caffeinated teas? And on Google and on Amazon, what kept rising was bubble tea, boba tea. Where can I find boba tea? And I was like, why? And I realized yes. all the boba cafes were closed.
Yes.
All people seeing favorite milk tea bars were closed. And we had already yes. come out with a Thai tea yes. and a matcha latte kit. And I was like,
yeah,
we already have the milk tea component here. The only thing we're missing is boba.
Yeah.
We should have a boba offering. So within a month, my amazing team, you know, put together this kit,
yes.
which included the boba pearls, the milk tea, the mm-hmm. teas that perform best as a milk tea, mm-hmm. the sweet condensed milk packets that we partnered mm-hmm. with Copper Cow Coffee on, and put it in this really experiential box. And that became our hero product of 2020. Like, we've sold literally yeah. millions of dollars of boba.
I believe it.
This boba experiences. And that was really due to COVID, of really finding an opportunity, and also an opportunity that we knew served yeah. what customers wanted
I and got were expressing it. Need my for during daughter that. And I, my daughter is a preteen. She's in junior high, her first year of junior high. And she was at a friend's house and she experienced bubble tea for the first time about a year ago, just before the pandemic hit and the lockdown went down. And she was a huge fan and she didn't know that I had been drinking it. And so that was an opportunity for us to kind of connect. And then when it shut down,
yeah.
we literally went online to try to figure out how to make it ourselves. And it was too overwhelming. And so we were like, you know, wah, wah, we're going to have to wait until it comes back up. And then I think right around the holidays, I started seeing bubble tea kits popping up. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then you and I talked and I literally, mm-hmm. my package arrived yesterday. It's downstairs and I haven't cracked it open because she and I are going to do incredible. That this weekend. And that's our way to connect. So,
yeah. And that's what we found during COVID, especially because it wasn't just the tea itself. It's like, yeah, people miss boba, but they yeah. could create this, make the experiences yeah. memories yeah. with their family members, you know? And that's what people would yeah. share videos of how they're mm-hmm. making boba mm-hmm. with their daughters, mm-hmm. with their moms, with their sisters. And then this became something too, that corporate, like we had some amazing corporate accounts come and being like, we don't know what to do. We have all these employees who are now at home. And we quickly created a experiential
oh my goodness.
Boba session. So we would send them the kits. Then we would yeah. come. I would do a lot of the sessions myself of how to make boba, show them how to make three or four drinks.
Oh,
and
my
like, we
gosh,
created a whole program, corporate program also from,
I love
from
it.
The boba experience too. So it.
I love it. If you have not had yeah. a boba tea, just do it. Just go. I'm partial to lychee or lychee, however you want to pronounce it. That's my favorite.
I love
my favorite
tea.
Favorite.
Yeah,
so I would recommend yeah. that to all y'all out there in the gooder world to give that a go. But wow, lots of fun stuff. Thank you for sharing. I have want to start wrapping up here before we end our time together. I wish we could kind of talk a little bit about your give back program. You mentioned it a little bit earlier. It sounds like just the beginning of making some really huge impacts for people who need it the most, you know, fresh water. What's the name of the program again?
It's our partnerships with Thirst Project, and they are an LA-based nonprofit that focuses on the water crisis and youth education around the water crisis too. So they have two components to their organization, mm-hmm. which is building water walls, but also educating youth in high schools, et cetera, around the
and
crisis.
And this is
and how
in the U.S. or
the
in, around the world?
No, that they, so we primarily
oh,
have
water
built
wells.
Water walls
yes.
in mm-hmm. Africa and East Botswana. Yeah. Yeah. So basically our relationship with Thirst Project, we've built
oh
I think
gosh,
three or four
awesome.
Water walls now to date. And so they can serve, you know, a whole village for the lifetime
right.
of the well. Obviously, there has to be some maintenance to it, but that's the intention with
changing
it.
Changing so, lives.
Yeah, I mean, you just never know. At first, when I started our partnership in 2016 with Thirst Project, I was like, well, you know, we're such a small, you know, we're still a small business, but like didn't really, wasn't able to, like, I didn't really envision us being able to build a water well in one day. So to kind of have that under our belt now, in fact, later on today, I'm having a meeting with Thirst Project around how we can sponsor some of these scholarships they have for a lot of their incredible youth across the country. So, I mean, yeah, that's been such a meaningful relationship to us and our team. And now we've, you know, been able to raise enough money or build enough water programs to support over 140,000 individuals. So we're really just
getting started.
We're just getting started, but we're really excited about what we've done and what we'll continue
awesome.
To
Thank
do
you
at
for
Thirst.
That work. So I always like to get some sort of interesting, some sort of interesting fact that people can share with their friends over happy hour, some sort of like, did you know? And I wonder if there's something about tea or your business that you might want to share with everybody that is kind of a fun fact.
Did you know that all tea comes from the same plant? It's one type of tea plant called Camellia sinensis, and it just has to do with the processing and oxidization levels that creates the distinction of a white tea, a black tea, a green tea, and really any other
tea. For some reason, I always thought white tea was just harvested earlier, but I guess it's the same plant. Yes. Gotcha.
So it's the same plant. It is. There's different harvesting times for tea, I think a lot of people think like, oh, no, like a black tea comes from a different plant.
Okay.
No, it's all the same.
What other women leaders or rising stars do you see? I always like to ask, you know, in the categories, but it really could be anywhere. Somebody that you like to elevate or just simply crush on right now.
Well, lately my crush... of a female leader crush has actually not been anyone like you think of as like an insane innovator necessarily, but Lindsay Snyder.
I don't know that name.
Have you ever heard the name? No. So yeah, a lot of people don't know her, but she's basically the CEO president of In-N-Out Burgers. And she is basically an heiress. It's her grandparents started the business. Mm-hmm. So she's worth like
a lot.
Mm-hmm. Billions probably, right? Single-handedly. But what I really appreciate about her is that she is actually under the radar. She doesn't do a lot of interviews. Mm-hmm. She's not in the limelight a lot. That's why like no one really knows about her. But I think what's really interesting about her is her dedication to preserving the integrity of the In-N-Out menu. So it's basically stayed the same as it was since the 1950s. The only addition she's made is in 2018, she added hot chocolate to the menu. But other than that, there's been no change. And I think it actually takes as much effort or more to preserve something than it does to change and innovate all the time. And I also think that there's a lot, we're in this culture of like, you know, innovation or fads or making the next keto, whatever, or plant-based, whatever. But I think that there is something beautiful about preserving and protecting the integrity of what you've built. And, you know, her stewardship is really, that's her life work, is really preserving it. And obviously they've been approached so many times to go public, to be purchased, all of these things. Like, but she's like, you know, it's not for sale. I'm just preserving it. Doesn't do a ton of interviews. She just focuses on what the core mission is. And in a world that's very distracting, I find that very refreshing.
Nice. I like that. That's very interesting. Sashi, what brands or trends are you watching right now? Or are you? Are you just really focused on what you're doing right now?
Yeah, we're not. And maybe this is like to our detriment, but I'm not really tuned into trends in a sense. Like, I think that there are certain trends that turn into like, you know, long-term imprints in our society that are necessary, right? Like we just launched an unsweetened line this week for tea drops. And that's because like, we know that the trend towards less sugar is here to stay. But on a holistic level, like really when we come up with different varieties or new experiences, we're really tapped into what our customers want. You know, we administer not only surveys, but we have a core group of maybe 1,000 T-Drops customers who I go to for advice. Like I literally asked them, they actually made a decision on what our brand video should be, all the way to they co-created our December holiday flavors to, you know, right now they're going to be instrumental to this woman health line that we're launching later this year. So that is what my gut check is. Anything else, any other fads, that's not really part of my conscious radar.
How do you keep your, this seems like a insane question because I know how busy you are, but how are you keeping yourself sane and centered these days?
Yeah. Well, I mean, meditation's part of kind of an ongoing practice I like to keep. And then I tried no matter what during the crazy days, I go and watch the sunset. I'm very fortunate to live like less than a mile from the beach. So that's like kind of my reward for the day of just literally watching the sunset.
Do you have a favorite tea that you take with you or do you change it up all the time? I'm curious.
I mean, my tried and true is the first tea drop I ever created, which was our chai spice. I just love chai and the spices and varieties with it. But no, I mean, I have favorites all the time. Right now, I'm really on a citrus ginger kick.
I'm really enjoying the matcha, by the way. That's,
Oh, great. Yeah. That's people love that one. It's a really, we work with a Japanese family farm in Aikido.
And that's a whole nother thing that all of your teas are influenced from all over the world. They're not like from one part of the world. I love that. I love it. So before we go, if people wanted to connect with you for any reason, what's your preferred way? Do you do LinkedIn or do you prefer people reach out to you through?
My preference is probably Instagram.
Okay.
Which is Sashi Chandran, at Sashi Chandran. So you can find me there and DM me and I'd be happy to reply.
Excellent. Well, Sashi, I really appreciate your time today and the work that you're doing. And I'm so happy to have met you. Thank you so much for your time.
Same. This was such a fun conversation.
This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.